Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we have with us Rabbi Pinchas Jurevel. He's the senior kashrus coordinator for the Chafkei, an expert in halacha. We'll be speaking with him about bugs in vegetables and lettuce, fruits, etc., as well as a number of other kashrus shailos. We will also have with us a fascinating kashrus shailos. We'll be speaking to him additionally about today's pots don't seem to have bleis. They don't seem to absorb. Does that change the halacha at all? New cutting-edge shaila. We will also have with us Rabbi Aaron Twersky, who's an expert in lulavim and esrogim and the shailas that are associated with them. Rabbi Yitzchak Berkowitz, he's the 16 years, the Mashkiach Ruchdi of Eisha Taira. He is considered a rabbi's rabbi. There are probably in the United States 40 communities that have Talmidim of his, who are the rabbis of those communities. He's the head of the Yerushalayim Kollel, the Jerusalem Kollel. He's the Rav of Sanhedrin Rechavet. He has so many positions and titles, it's really too hard to enumerate here. But we're going to be having some really fascinating questions with him. And really, one of the great Paiskim halachists of our generation. I would like to dedicate tonight's program to my grandfather, Rabbi David Werner. He was the Av Beis Din. He was the head of the court of the city of Providence in the years probably 1935 to 1955, when our religion, Judaism here in America, was really very frail. There were maybe 5 yeshivas, 6, 10 yeshivas in the whole country. It was an outpost. He was an outpost in Providence, Rhode Island, for all the rabbis, Rosh Hashivas, Rabbanim, when they needed some place to stay. And my mother, Tzlanga Yaron, had so many stories. She said, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, who founded the great yeshiva of Lakewood, stayed by them once, and my grandfather looked at him and he said, Rabbi Aaron, send me 10 boys, a minyan, and I would start a great yeshiva here in Providence. And Rabbi Aaron looked at him and he put his up and he said, 10 boys? He said, I wish I had 10 boys for myself. Imagine the status. My mother told me a story. She said that there was a very wealthy man. You needed a lot of courage. Today, there's Chal of Yisrael, everything. Glat Kasher. You could go on a cruise, a Chal of Yisrael cruise. You can all around the world on Chal of Yisrael. There's Pesach programs, Sukkot programs, skiing programs if you're a skier. Strap on those two little sticks and fly down a mountain. You can go have with Hechsherim and Rabbanim and Shurim go on a ski trip. It was very different then, and you had to have a lot of courage. There were no Jewish schools in Providence. All the kids went to public school. It was very challenging. So the wealthiest man in Providence opened a shul, and he did it shalayk halach. He did it and didn't both with, mechitza, kashrus, taras hamishpachet. So my grandfather and a few of the other Rabbanim put him in Cherem. They excommunicated the wealthiest man in Providence. And he came to my grandfather's house to try to appease him. So my grandfather said to my mother, she said, open the door, but run very quickly away because you're not allowed to stand within 10 feet of somebody who's in Cherem, of Adal Adamus. So she opened the door and she ran away. And the man came in. And my grandfather said, look, Mr. Leach, you stand there. I'm going to stand at the other side of the living room, and this is the way we're going to have our conversation. Another story she said is that a similar situation where a man came to him and he said, Rabbi, if you don't take down the mechitza, I'll turn your life black. And she said he stood up, and he had a big desk with a glass sheet on it, and he got so upset he slammed his hand down on the desk, and the entire glass shattered. And he said the man got so frightened, and he ran out. I think it's important to remember that our wonderful community stands on the shoulders of people who had really hearts of lions. And in a time when it was frightful and our entire religion, our entire people were at risk with what was going on in Europe, we really stand on their shoulders and we owe them great sense of hakaras, a toiv of gratitude. David ben Reb Simcha Bunim, Yehi Zichrei Baruch, we dedicate this program to him tonight.
You can listen to us Matzei Shabbos, 11 to 12 midnight, on WMCA 570 AM, or on the Nachum Siegel Network, or at WMCA.com. You can listen to us Monday morning at 11 a.m. on Nachum Segal. You can find all our shows at headlinesbook.com under the podcast section or on iTunes. You can always call us. You can call in our shows at 732-806-8700. You can email any questions or comments to info@headlinesbook.com. Before we go to the halacha portion of this program, I would like to say a little thought. You know, we're coming up to Sukkot. Eilemoy Adei Hashem, right? These are the Chagim, the Emtovim, the holidays of Hashem. We say Moy Adim L'Simcha. But you know, a lot of times it's not so happy. The Yom Tov goes by and we say, where did it all go? What happened? Now here's interesting. The word Moyed can mean two things. It can mean a Chag, a holiday. It could also mean a time of gathering, like Ohel Moyed, the gathering tent. Because during our Yom Tovim, we gather those who we love, friends, family, parents, children, sisters, brothers, the people we love come together, and it's supposed to be really happy. So what kills a Yom Tov? So let me share with you a story. 200 years ago, put yourself back in the city of Mezhebuzh in the Ukraine with the great Apdarov. The Apdarov was one of the three great Rabbanim in Poland. He was a Talmud of the Noam Elimelech. He had thousands of Siddim. He was the oldest Rav in Poland. He was Mayrach Yomim. He was like the Pe'er of Poland. He had a son, Yitzchak Meir, a very special son. And at some point in time, it seems he wasn't able to support his son anymore. Maybe he didn't want to support his son anymore. Maybe he felt it was time for him to go work. So his son said, Yitzchak Meir came to him and he said, what do you suggest I do? So his father said, you know, in Italy, they grow esrogim. It's warm, it's a balmy climate. Why don't you go down there? Bring the esrogim back to Germany. There were a lot of wealthy Jews in Leipzig. Sell them, and you'll have parnassa for the whole year. So he said, that's a good idea, and I'll be back here for Sukkot. Because Sukkot and Apt was beautiful. The Sukkah of the Apdarov. Thousands of Hasidim came, and they danced, and they sang, and the Apdarov said Torah, and they ate wonderful food. And his father gave him a little bit of a funny look, and he said, Seischem l'shalem, go in peace. So Yitzchak Meir, the son of the Apdarov, went down to, all the way, a long trip down to Italy, and he collected, he bought dozens, maybe hundreds of esrogim, brought them back to Leipzig in Germany, another long trip, and sold them, and had made wonderful, he did fabulously. Well, it was 2 days before Sukkot, and he said, I'm closing up shop early, and I'm going home, the beautiful Sukkah of the Apdarov, father, royalty. So, he left Leipzig, gave himself plenty of time, 2 days, and he had a fast horse and a wagon, and they went driving towards Apt. Well, what do you know? I'm not sure if it was traffic or bad weather, but it started to rain, and he got slower and slower and slower, and he couldn't make it to Apt. So picture this. He stops in some village. It's 2 hours before sunset. And he is so upset. He's going to be spending Sukkot, not with his father, but in some decrepit village. He doesn't have anything. Doesn't have challis. Doesn't have wine. Doesn't have fish. What does he do? He goes to the shul. And he sits down in the shul. And it's Yom Tov by night. And they come in, and the chazan says, Baruch Hu. And he's sitting there in back. He wants to cry. He knows Yom Tov, you're not allowed to cry. Everybody leaves the shul. And there's this one peculiar individual who seems to be davening much longer. And he's jumping, and he's hopping, and he's saying words. And it doesn't seem to be very tonefully. And he's watching a little out of the corner of his eye. And it's late at night. This fellow finishes davening, and he turns around, and he sees Yitzchak Meir sitting by himself. He says, you know, I don't have much food, but perhaps you'd like to join me in my sukkah. So what does he do? He gets up. He says, sure, he had no place to go. And he goes behind this person. and he comes to this ramshackle house. And there's a winding staircase in the back, and he climbs up the back, and on the roof there's a sukkah. Oy, what a sukkah. Not like the beautiful sukkah in Apt. It stretched for maybe a kilometer. It was decorated, beautiful, things hanging from the roof, candles. This was a decrepit sukkah covered with some thatch. And this yidla sits there, and his wife brings him some challis and some fish and some wine. And he makes kiddush. It seems to him he's stumbling over the words, and this such he's miserable. This Itzhak May, he's just miserable. And they go out to wash. And after they wash and sit down, the door opens, and a man comes in, and he's dressed. He's covered with flour, maybe a little blood on him too. He looks like a baker, maybe a butcher, an innkeeper. And he's so miserable, he says, oh, look at the people I have to eat with. And Itzhak Meir looks at him and he says, let me introduce you to my friend Abraham. He says, yeah, Abraham. And he sits down and he eats his fish and he's thinking about his father's beautiful tish. Meanwhile, his balabas is sitting there. He's whispering with the butcher, the baker. The night is over. Next night again, same thing. He comes, this fellow invites him again. He makes kiddush. And he's again so miserable. And another fellow comes in. This one, a farmer. His mud on, little mud on his clothing. Looks like he handled shovel or something. Comes in, he says, let me introduce you, my friend Isaac. He says, yeah, hello, Isaac. Again, they sit down, the balabas and this fellow, and they start whispering to each other urgently. And he's just thinking about what his father used to speak about. Well, it's the next night. He's going to leave in the morning. And they come in, they're eating, you know, a little suda matzah yamtif. And the door opens again, and a shepherd walks in. He says, let me introduce you to my friend, the shepherd. He's thinking, butchers, bakers, shepherds, farmers, why aren't I an app? The next morning at the crack of dawn, he thanks this fellow. He jumps into his wagon, and he's off the road, and the roads are dried up. And he makes it all the way to Apt right away, 2 hours later. And he walks in, and he sees the holy Apt, the Rav. He goes running over to his father. And his father says to him, Nunu? He says, Nunu, what Nunu? He says, what do you say? He says, what do you mean? He says, the sukkah, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. He says, Avraham. He says, don't you remember? V'el ha-boka rotz Avraham. Right? Kuchu, l'shi ugois, take flour, make cake, he said, when the Arachim come. And his mouth is opening. He says, the second night, Yitzchak, v'yizra be'eretz ahi, me'ya sharim, he dug, he planted, he dug wells, the farmer. He says, the third night, shepherd, the Yaakov Royet Sain Lovan, Esrim Shana, Rechelecha Izechele Shikelu, Trefele Ivesielecha, Miyadiachatena, Gnufsi Loim, Gnufsi Laila, the farmer, the baker. And he thinks, where was I? I wasn't even there. I was in my head. I was someplace else. Well, isn't that the story of our lives? Hashem gives us so many beautiful things. We're going to come to Sukkot. We have beautiful. We have children. We have parents. We have siblings. We have friends. But we're not there so often. What does it say on Shabbos? Im toshiv mi Shabbos reglecha. Asayis chafatzecha. Don't leave your dalad amas. Stay where you are. Al yetzei ish bimkaymei. That's the whole issa tchumen. That's why la halacha, what's the Isser HaChana of Shabbos and Yom Tov? You can't prepare for the next day. Just stay right here. Embrace the moment where you are. Not tomorrow. No HaChana. Not the other place. Al Yetzei Yishmim Kaimai. Right over here. Right? And it's V'daber Daber. It's not about other things. It's about right now. Right here. The people you love. The time you love. You know? Once heard a story I'll share with you. A little boy for his bar mitzvah had a very special grandfather. His grandfather said to him, you know, I have a magical watch I'd like to share with you. This is your bar mitzvah present. He walked in, it looked like a plain old-fashioned watch. He said, this watch has a magic to it. Take the most special moment in your life and press in the button, and that will be spirit. That will be your moment. You will always be that moment. So it was right before his bar mitzvah, and this boy wore the watch, and he said to Haftarah, and people yelling Mazel Tov, he said, should I press that button and just, this will be my moment, my whole life I'll have it with me, stored, frozen in time. He said, you know, there are going to be better moments. I'm going to be married one day. I'm going to have a beautiful kala with a chuppah. That's good. So he saved it. Well, came the time for the kala. They were just Mazel Tov. He was about to press it, and he said, and aren't I going to have a beautiful home with my wife? Maybe I'll make a bris. So the bris came, and he said, you know, what about his bar mitzvah? That's going to be even more special. And by the bar mitzvah, his son said, a great drasha. He didn't press it, and he said, his chasana. And by the chasana, it was when the kid will have grandchildren, when he'll have grandchildren. And you know, they say, he was buried, and they never pressed, he never used the button on his watch. So what's the story? Yom Tovim are coming up. My Adim L'Simcha. It's a time of gathering. Let's not let this moment get away from us. We should all be Zaycha to my Adim L'Simcha. We should come away for Hasi'enu. We loaded ourselves up. We gripped every moment. We lived every moment of these Yom Tovim. Let's good Yom Tov to everybody. Let's go to our fabulous guests. Tashchis, if I have such a big Talmud Chacham on the phone and I don't ask him a few halacha shaylas, okay? So let me ask you a shayla that's very relevant, and it's going to become more and more relevant. I know that most Haredim in Eretz Yisrael don't have an iPhone, but in America it's the norm rather than the exception. And I think that ultimately in Eretz Yisrael, ultimately will become a norm too, because today, you know, your refrigerators, your lights, your air conditioning, everything's being run. Your cameras is being run. But be that as it may, this is what happened. Today I came to the office. I took an Uber. Are you aware what an Uber is?
No.
An Uber is you take your iPhone, you press the button, sends out a signal to any of it. There's a company called Uber. Any available driver within the region. It says, okay, so-and-so will be there in 4 minutes. And he takes you to where you're going, and then you just walk out because through your iPhone he's paid, etc. So it's, right, it's the common way of getting around New York today. And Uber's in almost every country in the world. I don't know if they're in Israel, but some version of it is in Israel. Then somebody orders something, it gets delivered, and what happens when you walk out of the Uber? It prompts you. Rate the driver 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5 stars, from 1 to 5 stars. What does that mean? The next time you order one, it tells you who your driver is and what his rating is. And you could decline. I don't want somebody. Or they ultimately could push people off the system who they don't think are treating you well. So it's really the most honest and transparent way to get from a big body of users real, you know, unbiased opinion of services. So you go to a store, you check. What is their rating on Yelp or on WhatsApp or on TripAdvisor in 2 minutes, you know, is it a good hotel? Is it a bad hotel? Is it a good plumber? Is it a bad... It's become the norm. Immediately afterwards, you press. Well, are you allowed to rate... Let's say you would be an Eretz Yisrael, would be a Yiddish driver, right? Would it be a Shiloh of Lashon Hara? Would you be allowed to rate the driver? If I rate him 5, well, maybe I'm doing him a favor. It could also be a lie. If I rate him 3, which is subpar, I'm saying Lashon Hara on his services.
Now, all of this is included, like the Uber, this is, the what's going on your iPhone is like, it's part of the business.
Yes, it is. As soon as you, when you check your email, before you order the next Uber, you rate the driver of the prior trip.
Yeah, so to begin with, anyone that is an Uber is agreeing to it. That's the first thing. So in terms of any nezik, This is something that he agreed to in the first place. The only question of Lashon Hara here is a question of gnai. If you have to make sure you're telling the truth, and you have to make sure that it's l'tayelis, you know, that your kavan is l'tayelis. And then the halach is its mutter.
So then it would be the same thing for a restaurant, for a hotel.
It's the same for every, but the restaurant, the hotel, I mean, they're agreeing to be part of this?
No, they're not, but that's, you know, when you look at it, no, people rate hotels, and that's how people rent hotels based on these ratings. Before you go to a hotel, you go to TripAdvisor, and you see, what's the rating of this hotel?
You see, in theory, I see this Olas Ta'alas, and it's wonderful. I see a few flaws in it. The first one is that there are different reasons why people are dissatisfied. You know, why one person was dissatisfied isn't necessarily something that would really have an effect on you, and you're really putting someone else off using them when there's really no justification for it. The second thing is that,
But let me go back to that. But that's why they have 1,000 ratings, because it's a compendium of all the ratings. One guy like this, one guy like this. So the synthesis, when you agglomerate 1,000 ratings, you sort of get a view of what it is.
It's not all that scientific. I get it. It's not all that scientific. You know, it could be that certain elements of the population have reason why they don't like something in particular. You know, I can see it. I'm willing to accept that when you're dealing with a mass of people, the odds are that the information is relevant. If not totally accurate, but pretty accurate. Okay. Then there's the next question, which is, you know, I know when it comes to all sorts of ratings on the internet, there are companies that will work on upping your image by simply flooding places with positive or negative comments, depending on whose side you're on and how much you're paying. Is this going on there too?
It's very hard when you take an Uber. Somebody actually has to take the ride. I mean, they don't.
Someone's
got to
take the ride. So people are, you know, you got to pay a lot of money to get a lot of people to take rides to really up the numbers.
Why would they want to distort one rider's information? Chavetz Chaim is at a restaurant or whatever, some type of an eatery. I don't know what. Together with another Adam Gadol. And the host came over and they said, "Oh, how was the food?" And the person said, "It wasn't so tasty. It wasn't salty." They were rating the food. And the Chafetz Chaim, it's a famous story, went after the wedding. He said, "This is the worst meal. This is terrible. My entire life I was against Lashon Hara. How could you say Lashon Hara on the cook in the kitchen?" Well, they were just rating the food.
Who asked for the food? Who was interested in the rating?
The host came over and said, "How do you find the food?" And this Adam Gadol, this is brought into the Sipuri Chafetz Chaim, said, "The food..." And the Chafetz Chaim then said to this Adam Gadol, "Not only did you speak Lashon Hara, but I bet you caused an almana or a poor woman her job." He said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Right now, in the kitchen, the host is going to be standing there berating the chef, who's probably a woman, who needs to do this because she's supporting her family, about..." I said, "Let's see." So they went into the kitchen, and the host was standing there screaming at the cook. It's brought in the... So at the time said, "You were either both Lashon Hara, you were mazik this person." The person just said, "I want you to know the food isn't good. You gotta fix your food. I raided your food. I Ubered your food." So I'm trying to just understand what is the parameter.
No. If you're talking about rating a place for society, of really seeing to it that Aleph, you're upping the quality of food altogether, and the other is that you're helping people find the place they like. That's certainly letalis and that's mutter. You know, in terms of what's going on there, I wouldn't be surprised if what you're talking about is the kind of inn that you're stuck in when you're on the road, and who said that you're supposed to do a favor to, get the food better? Maybe this almana's job is more important than one meal for a passerby. I don't know the details, but
okay.
It makes sense that that's the story.
Okay.
Whereas if it's a question of society, there's no question that if there's some way of seeing to it that you keep up the quality of things for the sake of the public, that's tailless. That's absolutely tailless.
Okay. So let me ask you another question. Recently, there was an article done in Tchumen where a number of scientists and rabbanim did a chemical test on bleis in pots and in plates. And they said scientifically today, because of the quality of the way the kelim are made, because the quality of dishwashing fluid, because the heat of the dishwashers, etc., there's no discernible bleis in the kelim. And they left it with an open-ended question. What does this mean for us halachically?
Yeah, so first of all, Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you do, Rav Shlomo Zalman used to say he's waiting. One of the things Mashiach is going to do is tell us that we don't have bleis in stainless steel pots. He wasn't ready to be kaveya that. He was mitzaref that when he had a couple of other reasons to be mati. As far as Lamaisa, first of all, there were two times when I was teaching Isser Veheta to groups. One time that we had actually a food scientist was part of the Chabura, I won't give his name. He's no longer a food scientist. He's a big mashpia in Klal Yisrael. But at that time, he was a food scientist. And he told us that the fragrant oils that carry tam do get absorbed into pots, even stainless steel ones. It's very, very subtle. You cannot, like, we cannot taste it. But when there is some kind of, there is some kind of sphera, you know, that there are two chemicals that don't get along, you will, the people in the business will know that they can't use the same pot for those two things. He said there's enough, enough traces in it to go ruin a different kind of food. He said there are only certain ones. He was giving me examples there if you boiled milk in a pot, and even if you washed it out well, and then you wanted to go and, pickle corned beef there, he said it would interfere. He said that was fact. There was a different time that I had at a chabura, and they decided to get in touch with, the chief scientist for a company that made dental equipment. And he told them that the silver that's used in fillings and teeth is totally non-porous. It absorbs nothing, whereas the stainless steel that is used for pots is slightly porous. It does absorb, though very little, which means that in reality, there's probably a little bit of blia. We don't know what the shear is. We have no idea what the shear is. And because, you know, we're not Soymach on Ti'imas Yisroel for Isser, we have no way of knowing, at least Ashkenazim don't. We don't rely on Ti'imas Yisroel to be Soymach on it for Isser.
Rabbi Berkowitz is referring to that the Sfaradim are Soymach on Kfela.
The Sfaradim are Soymach on Kfela with Ashkenazim or not.
And the Ramah says we are not Soymach on Kfela.
The truth is that the Kaf HaChaim says that most Sfaradim don't either. But they do tell stories of Sfardim that relied on a trailer and then tasted it themselves. Once they told them it was mutter, they tasted it in for Ashkenaz because Timas Yisrael was mutter.
Yeah, but Rav Henkin and many other poskim have said that that chemical testing is better than kfela, and you could be seimach on it, and it's used by the kashrus organizations in America.
There are no traces. Question is it really so that there are no traces whatsoever? You know, when it comes to fillings, when they tell us that there are no traces whatsoever, they're totally non-porous, you know, you get that. Whereas once you start telling us that it's just very small traces, I don't know how we would evaluate, you know, when it has tam or not. But definitely, this is some, again, Rav Shlomo Zalman was mitzarefit to other kulis, and he said that when Mashiach comes, we'll know better.
Okay, let me ask you a third question. You know, in America, the bugs in lettuce is, and I imagine in Eretz Yisrael, in Paris, etc., is a very big issue. So we were asked the following question. There's a rule in Kol HaTorah that a mesasik, an unintended action, is potter. So when somebody wants to eat lettuce, they clearly don't want, they have no kavanah, and they have no intention, nor do they think they're eating a bug. So if you eat lettuce, let's say, and I'm not talking about lettuce where there's a reasonable chance there's a bug in there, maybe just pick it off ahead, but let's say you buy the bagged lettuce that it says on it, it's triple washed. So there's a great rave that there's nothing there. I mean, Dole, who manufactures it, does not want you eating a bug. So if at the worst case there was one there, why isn't there a tour of mesasek? And I'm going like the shittas of Rav Achrayim that a mesasik is pata legamre, not like Rabbi Kivagin Semenches, who says that even mesasik is problematic.
So yeah, Rabbi Kivagin Semenches holds that mesasik is only a ptur chatas and kol haTorah. It's only in Shabbos that it's nothing.
Yeah, but the Rav Achrayim, I mean, the big body of Achrayim don't know. Rabbi Kivagin was mechadish just 200 years ago. But the Rav Achrayim
is very strong, but nevertheless, a lot of Achrayim are chaylik on it.
But yeah, so the question I was asked is there any problem with eating the bagged lettuces, or, you know, people make themselves crazy with washing fruit. There are whole industries they don't use anymore, strawberries, raspberries. Somebody said wash it two or three times. You did a washing. Now already, in the worst case, you're misasik. A misasik is pata. What would Kfayd Harav say to this issue?
Now, so there's a problem. The problem is that once you receive something where there's a miyat ha-motzi, Chazal tell you that there's a chiyav bdika. If you're not makayim your chiyav bdika, Chazal asserted it to you until you're baidik. So you're breaking the Yisod Rabbanon who are Machayev B'dika on a Miyat Shena Matzui. Sorry, on a Miyat HaMatzui.
Yeah, but once it's pre-washed lettuce, so it's not a meat. I'm not saying anymore.
There's a tshuva from Rebbe Yashiv. I saw the Ksaviyad. There's a tshuva that Rebbe Yashiv wrote to hotels that have a hard time, you know, have a hard time checking things like to the very end the way you're supposed to. The way many of the housewives check, if you would do that in a hotel, they'd need a full-time staff doing that. So Rav Yashiv wrote to them that if by the time it arrives in the plate of the consumer, it is a miyat she'ena matzui, then they don't have a chiyuv bdika and they're allowed to eat it. The same halacha would be if a company went ahead and cleaned it to the point that it's a miyat she'ena matzui. When you get it, even though they weren't makayim their halacha and they couldn't eat it, when you buy it, you got something where it's a miyat she'ena matzui. And their chazal weren't mechayiv to be baidik, and you're allowed to eat it. And there, if you ate it, then you're either misasik or an onus, you know, whatever one wants to call it. But there, it's fine. Now, so it really depends on the state of the food when it comes into your rishus. If you're sitting at a restaurant, you're a guest at someone else's house, you bought a package of lettuce. If we can be kaveh that it's not matsui after it goes through that process, although they weren't mechayiv their chiyuv. When you get it, you're allowed to eat it.
Berkowitz, it's been an honor to have you on, and we've had a request from hundreds of people to hear you. It's really a tremendous covet, and we would be most appreciative if we can get you on at another occasion.
It's great talking to you again. Chazak ve'amad.
Good kibenshtya.
Good kibenshtya.
Toltav, a good kibenshtya. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Pinchas Jervell, who is the senior kashrus coordinator of the Chaf Kei. He's a musmach of Beis Medrash Gevoya of Lakewood. Welcome, Rabbi Jervell.
Thank you.
Rabbi Jervell, we were asked the following question. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a rule that misasek, an unintended action, is potter in kala Torah kula, except where you're a nene, except where you get hano, where you get life pleasure from it, because it's assumed at that point you have a din, it's not unintended at that point. So we were asked, there was, for example, on Shabbos, if somebody accidentally is leaning over to pick over a glass of coffee and they flip the switch, it would be pata. In many other actions in the Torah. So,
okay, that's a phenomenal question.
Wait, let me finish the question.
So
we're asking the following question. Many people don't eat, you know, broccoli, lettuce, etc., because we know that there may be a bug. There is a chance there may be a bug. Well, certainly somebody who's eating a piece of lettuce has no intention of eating a bug. They want to eat a piece of lettuce. They're eating broccoli. They have no interest in eating bugs. They'd be repulsed by bugs. So, assuming for a minute, we're talking about not where we know there's a high likelihood of bugs, but let's say you buy one of those bagged lettuces. It says that they're triple washed, etc. Why do I have to do, or you wash the broccoli, and you know, or you buy pre-washed broccoli, and Dole, the great, does not want you eating bugs in your broccoli. So why are we going crazy with, you know, with all this bodek, etc.? Why can't we be simich on the heter of misasek? That is the question we'd like to put forth.
Okay, that's a phenomenal question. Before I answer it, though, I'd like to first say the basics of the halachas of Dikas Tehillim. These can be found by anyone who opens Shulchan Aruch Yerideh Asim and Pei Dalet. Min HaTorah, one is required to search for bugs on something that the majority of that item, a vegetable or fruit or whatever it may be, has insect infestation. Midrabbanan, they've made an obligation, a chiyuv bedika, and anything that has what's called a miyut hamatzai, a common but not every time, and we follow the opinion generally of the Yeshua's Yaakov, which means 1 in 10. I would have done 10% of this product or whatever it is that we're discussing has but insect infestation, one has an obligation, midrabbanan, at least to check it. So that, and misasik is not going to solve that problem for you. But it's a phenomenal question. It's such a great question that legend has it that Bistrol Salanter asked this question to none other than Reb Kiv Eiger.
Who didn't respond.
Who didn't respond. But after his death, Reb Shlomo Eiger, his son, said that the famous tshuva in Chelek Aleph, Simen Ches, which talks about Misasek, was directed on this to this question. Even though if you look there, it's directed to a certain person named Reb Avram, and he doesn't directly say the word Teiloim ever, and he strictly sticks to the discussion about Shabbos and some unique applications there. But the legend goes that way. It's brought down, if you want to see the full story, in the Pirish called Achiza Ba'akev, Ha'ara Dalet, written by Rabbi Shurkin. Rabbi Shurkin here in Lakewood, who wrote a Pirish on Shuvas of Kivagasim, and Ha'ara Dalet, he brings the who we heard it from back many generations, where this story comes from. So it's a phenomenal question. There's no question about that. There are many, many Achrayim that discuss this. For example, Shlomo Zalman has a letter who says he feels, even though one may not technically enjoy the bug, since one knows that the bug is could be or probably in the fruit, and you're enjoying the fruit, that's already enough hanah that the misasek is not going to be a pitzur. Others argue with him. There's an Imre Bina who strongly argues. Okay, let's say Rabbi Kiv Eiger takes the position that misasek is not a heter, misasek is what we call a pitzur from carbon. You're not required to bring a carbon if you do it b'shegek. But it's never mutter. The Imre Bina and many achreinim argue on Rabbi Kiv Eiger. So there's many different opinions out there on how to deal with this question. But
so
there's no question
Rabbi,
that's a phenomenal Rabbi, question.
Rabbi Gervell, the Rabbi Kiv Eiger that you're citing brings an Asivis, who was a contemporary of his, who
right.
argues with him and holds that Misasik is Potter. And the question
correct.
That the Asivis asks, he says, after Bedikas Chametz, if you missed something, why do you need Bittel for your Misasik? So, which would mean, and he gives some terrors which would not be relevant to this, but you see clearly that according to the Nesivis, if somebody did a bedika on vegetables, that would be the equivalent of bedikas chametz, which means he did a checking, he took a candle when he looked. At that
right.
point, you would be a misasik. So my question
right.
would again be, if you take the dull bags of pre-washed lettuce, which I think. It's possible, and I don't know the answer because I have to, you know.
Okay, I would prefer we stay away from using brand names because of it. It doesn't
okay.
I don't want to look like an endorsement
okay.
of a particular
okay,
brand.
Okay, well, without any particular brand, but they're pre-washed lettuce. They come
mm-hmm.
from these huge manufacturers that it's
correct.
Less than a 1 in 10 would have a bug. In that case, would you say that according to the Yeshuas Yaakov, there would be a tour of Misasek?
Well, that's a good question. Firstly, you were not. I believe that you were not fulfill the obligation of Chiyuv Bedika by buying that type of pre-washed lettuce that you're discussing.
Why not?
So because that's not Bedika.
Yeah, but if you rent a house that's already baduk, right? Hamaskir bais lechaverei. If you hold
mm-hmm.
it al hamaskir livdaik, and you
okay.
rented it after it's livdaik, there's no Chiyuv Bedika anymore. So if this
if
person
you have really, to check that he did bedika, you have
no,
to ask him if he did bedika.
Right. So if you're buying,
if he did bedika,
and it says agreed, and it says here triple washed, it says on the container, right? Which
okay.
is good as, and you're having a certification from a big company that they triple washed it, and they certainly have good reason to triple wash it. They don't want you eating a bug. So would that rise to the level of the Nesivis' case where you did a bedika, and therefore there? Now, according to Rabbi Kiv Eiger, this would be problematic, but according to the Nesivis and many others who don't hold the Rabbi Kiv Eiger's Chiddush,
correct.
Would that be sort of Misasik?
Since the goals of their washing and your goal of eating not bug are not, they're close, but they're not exactly the same. Again, my personal opinion that one has not gone far enough that we can say you're in the clear and it's mutter. You may argue if you'd like. There's a welcome to disagree with me, but that's my opinion. That's my opinion.
Okay. And where would this be relevant? I guess this would be relevant to many things that you don't have bodek on. For example, there are many
mm-hmm.
people who don't eat raspberries or strawberries, etc. But
correct.
If you washed it to the point where it's not 1 in 10 anymore,
That's where the question would be. If you could wash your strawberries, let's say you wash the strawberries to where it's less than 1 in 10, do you need a magnifying glass at that point? Or at that point, would you, if you personally did it, could you be Simach on the Yeshua's Yaakov?
He's relying on the Yeshua's Yaakov. Again, it might be part of Misasi, but I don't believe unless your type of washing has been verified that it really gets rid of the bugs, I don't think you've fulfilled your obligation called Chiyuv Bedika. That Chiyuv Drabana. That's not a Misasi din, that's a Chiyuv Bedika din of Drabana. If you have a true tried and tested method that brings down that it gets rid of the bugs, then yes, you're 100% in the clear.
Where it's less than 1 in 10. So what did less than 1 in 10 be the parameter here?
I don't think so. When one has a chiyuv bedika, your job is, just like by bedikas chametz, when you do bedikas chametz, your job is to search everything. Your job, whenever you fall under that obligation, midrabanan of chiyuv bedika, your job is to get rid of as much as is humanly possible under normal circumstances. There is one case that the Prima Gadim discusses actually applies to raisins. Taz and the Prima Gadim that talk about a case of a sveka that they're matir, and the question they added, but I shouldn't say, Taz is matir, I believe it's a cotton test rav, it's not a test zion, eating raisins, which he refers to as raisin kush, based on a sveka. The Prima Gadim asked on that we know from Yerudea Simen Kuf Yud, that when it's Efshur Levarer, one is not supposed to rely on a sveka. And he answers, since it's a tircha, to do a proper checking requires a certain type of looking in the sun at a certain time, and only when the sun's available in certain angles. So that's called a tircha, and then one is allowed to rely on the sveka.
Okay, so Rabbi Gervell, let me clarify what you're saying. Let me ask you another question. There was an article published in Tchumen a number of years ago, I think like 1 or 2 years ago, but there were a number of articles that today's pots and pans are made of a quality, and we wash them in hot water and soap, which did not exist at the time of Chazal. And there's many rayas. The Gemara says that the pottery would actually change color from the bleus, from whatever you were cooking. So a number of scientists in Tchumen, they did a test on the walls, and they said that the residue is not 1 in 60, but it's 1 in 1,000. So the question is, if so, could we use this as a reason to be maker, let's say, to let's say, kasher, plastics, etc., other areas, because we know that there are no bleas. Scientifically, there are no bleas today.
Again, that's an answer to the question. I'd like to read you Chavetz Chaim in Hagdama to his Sefer Likutei Halachos. Has a couple words from here. He says, L'chaira, halay parashas hagoa. If one thinks the discussion of the Torah of Kasher and Kelim, who dovar shaseichel mechaivai, is something that any thinking person realizes is necessary. It's like if the absorption was not very strong, chenivlai deresim, the absorption happens through hot water. We understand it's enough to kasher with boiling water. Levat. Now, bli ayideyar, if the absorption happened through fire, ha'achshur gamken ayideyar. The kashering also can take place, and therefore the Chavetz Chaim asks, why is this called a chayk, a type of rule from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we don't understand? Approximately 100 years ago, when this Likutei Halachos was written, the types of pots and pans and cleaning methods used at that time were so obvious to people that it was necessary to kasher, one didn't even question it. Yes, it could be technology has improved. Like we find many times during Chazal that they reveal to us some of the reasons, but there are other reasons that Chazal makes there, so the Torah said halachas, and we don't have the knowledge and to decide that no longer applies to us. Someone recently quoted to me in the name of a Gadol that we're waiting for Mashiach to come and tell us that stainless steel has no bleus. And it may very possibly happen. I know that Rav Schwab, Olah Shalom, held that it doesn't really absorb, but we can't paskin it, la'alacha. But there were certain times he would use a lesser type of kashering if it was difficult to do the full kashering using this svara that you're mentioning as a, what we call a tzirv, as a, one of the things that going into the calculation of the final psak.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Jeravel. And I know you're on a schedule, so we're out of time, but we thank
I'd like
you.
To throw out one question for your readership, if you find the time, or for yourself, if you don't mind. We in halacha have a lot of rules of how, when we give a hechsher to food, or what food we're allowed to eat. There's another set of halachas that apply to when someone's sick and wants to take a medicine. Those are found in Yeridea, Kufn, and Hay, for those who are not familiar with, at the end of Hilchos Avodah Zarah. What happens in an area that Chazal never had the opportunity to discuss, what we would call today vitamins, supplements, something that normal healthy people are taking, but are taking it for health reasons, not because it tastes good, not because it's nutritious or delicious, but it's taken for health purposes, but one is not sick. What halachic status do things like vitamins and nutritional supplements have? For example, the classical difference, let's start with the simplest difference. On a medicine, one does not need to worry what type of kalim it was produced on. There's no bleas from, we say only food can put bleas into kalim and then back into the next food. We don't say that on a medicine. On a food, we are worried about it. When we produce a vitamin or a nutritional supplement, how far do we have to concern ourselves halachically with the kashrus that the kalim is being produced on?
Wait, but Rabbi Jeravel, the vitamins that I've ever taken in my life are so nasty. They smell so bad. I don't think any dog would eat them. And so they're nifsal me'achilas kelev, and we have a chazinish. There's a chazinish that says in Hilchos Pesach that there's no achshave.
There are a lot of people that eat them. They're
horrible.
I'm not convinced that they're horrible. So if you're talking about chewable vitamins,
it's one thing. But if you're talking about those smelly, horrible vitamins,
the fish oil is really smelly. The other ones are not so bad, and there are the chewable ones, and some of these have flavors in them.
Well, the chewable ones.
There's all kinds of levels, right? There's chewable. There's liquids. Rav Moshe said takes the position that liquids that taste good are a problem.
Of course they're
what
a problem. It's achshavei.
Right. But what happens if
it's right lachila, yeah?
What happens if it's liquid and doesn't taste good? What happens if it tastes good and it's not a liquid? Right? Those areas are very unclear in halacha. There's really, I have not found some good Mara Mekremis in this area. And if anybody would be able to enlighten me, I would appreciate it.
So what is your question? We're going to say it is Roy Lachila, but since you're doing it for health reasons, would there be some way to be Mater on Blias? Is that the question?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's not a Chayla. It's very hard to...
He's not a Chayla. I'm talking about somebody who's not... Now, the Chayla takes a vitamin. It's no different than a medicine. I'm talking about a non-Chayla who wants to take a vitamin. And I get these questions all day and all the time. And people call me, I'm supposed to take this vitamin. Has no hechsher. I can read you the ingredients.
Rabbi Jeravel, let me give you a maramakim.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, we all know that on Shabbos, we're not supposed to take medication. Unless you're a Laila.
Correct.
Rav Shlomo Zalman discusses, in Alich Shlomo, he says, what happens if somebody takes something every single day of the month they take that? Right? And the interruption would cause some type of a problem. So even though he's 100% healthy, but right now...
In that case, because he's the etzem of chayla.
Well,
right?
No, if it's to prevent chayla. Somebody takes a particular... So Shlomo Zalman is matter because he says something that you take is ongoing as part of an ongoing to prevent chayla. So preventing chayla has the same din. I'm not sure that would go for vitamins. It could be.
I'm not sure how far it's going to go.
Yeah,
and one knows
good.
That Rav Moshe holds that taking vitamins on Shabbos is also David Sina held it was mutter. That would play into this. Right? And David Sina says it's Michael Briam. So if he really, it depends how far you take that statement of Michael Briam, you might have to worry about. And David Sina's cool on Shabbos could possibly come out of Chumrah on having to worry about kalim when you make these products. And if you take Rav Moshe to the nth degree, maybe you would not have to, possibly. Some want to say that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more work to be done on this shaila. And
yeah.
I haven't...
Very good contemporary shaila. Well, it's been an honor having you with us. Thank you very much, Rabbi Gervais.
Well, okay, with you.
Then take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Merci Mataiva.
Merci Mataiva. Have on the phone with us Diane Aaron Twersky. He's a Diane of the Pawnee community in Lakewood. He's a Lishchabura in Beis Medrash Gevaya. And he's also a musmach of the Yeshiva of Lakewood. And we're going to be speaking to him about the Dalad Minim. Welcome, Diane Twersky.
Thank you.
Could you tell us, what are some of the shilas that you come across in Dalad Minim that our listenership should be aware of?
So, an esrig, we'll start with esrig. The most common problems on esrig are colors that don't belong on the esrig. Halacha is that a mara, shchaira, a black color on the esrig, would make it possible in some cases, and a mara levana, a white color on the esrig, would make it possible. There are many other colors that come on the esrig, mostly brown and what we call a black fleck, which is the leaf, which is stuck on the esrig. Sometimes the thorns that the esrig grows on, the tree the esrig grows on, has thorns, and they would prick the esrig and push a leaf into the esrig. So first thing one has to determine is if the mara, if the color, is a color which makes the esrig possible. As I mentioned, black and white are the ones which make the esrig possible. Other ones, brown and that leaf, the black fleck, do not make the esrig possible.
Okay, so the first thing you look for would be colors. How common is it to possible an esrig because of a mara, let's say, shchaira, which let's say would pass? How common is that?
If one, it's quite common to happen on the esrigim that come from the trees. When they're already sold, so some stores you would only have very nice esrogim. They won't have ones that have black dots. If you go to a shuk or a place, an open place that sells all different kinds of esrogim, you would find it pretty often. I don't know if it'll be one in 20 or maybe...
Okay.
Maybe.
Because I once heard from Rav Dick, he once come to you commonly that you'd say, if you see this or you have this, you should go ask a shaila. Tell our listenership.
Besides for the mara?
Yes, besides the mara, yeah.
There's a chazazis, which is a pimple or boils on the esrig.
Yeah.
Most commonly, I see them all the way on the top of the esrig. Also, it's not so common, but it does happen. I have a couple of them in front of me, but this is not a video program. But, the esrig has bletus, which are bumps on the esrig, and they're actually a sign of a nice esrig. Esrig looks different than a lemon. A lemon has smooth skin. Esrig has a bumpy skin. Those are bletus. If one was to puncture the bletus with a needle, nothing would come out, maybe just a drop of juice. A chazazis or a pimple is filled with fluid. Such a pimple will make the esrig puzzle if it's on the top of the esrig, on the chayta.
What about on the lulav? What is the most common shaila you would see?
The most common shaila on the lulav is the open top leaf, which did not really make it puzzle. But mostly when people look for esrigim, lulavim, they are very busy making sure that the middle leaf, called the tiaimus, which is a continuation of the wood, the shedra of the lulav, is closed. Most important is that it shouldn't be cut off. If it's cut off, it could really make it puzzle. And also, if it's opened in a way that makes it look like two, that would, what's called Avid Ki Hemnik. Hemnik was a tool, a spacing tool, that would space lines when a cipher would write. So if it would, it's a similar shape of a Y. So if it's open like that, that would make it puzzle.
Is it fair to say, Rabbi Twersky, that it's quite uncommon to have a lulav that's that open because it needs at least a sheer tef? It needs a considerable amount for it to be puzzle?
To be puzzle because it's open, it's not so common because even the tefach, many shittas would hold, is kosher.
And to be cut
to
off.
To be open to make it like a hemnik, that would be more common. And that would be possible, but not so common.
Not so common. And to be cut off is fairly uncommon. I mean, a person would see if it was cut off, unless it's a mashahu, which is really a very remote chumrah of the chayadam, which Shulchanar, even the Mishnah Berurah makes a way of. So is it fair to say that it's pretty uncommon, both of these issues?
Yeah.
So let's ask another thing. As a rav of a community, a younger man comes to you and he says, I want to buy an esrig. And a nice esrig is, honestly, I wouldn't even know. How much is a nice esrig, Rabbi Tversky?
Let's say $120.
It's $120. And you know this fellow is not very, he learns in Kailal. I think Lakewood Kailal pays $240 a month. So this is 50% of his monthly Kailal income. What would you advise this person?
They pay 370 something a month.
It's more than a third. It's 40% of the of what he earns monthly, right? So what would you tell this person?
I'll say hider mitzvah ad shlish. So it is a question what that means, ad shlish per mitzvah, a third of the price more. I would not think that one is not chayiv to do that. Definitely one is not chayiv to spend so much on an esrig. You could get kosher ones for much, much cheaper, $20 or $30. And you could get mahuda ones for $70, $80. People do feel that it's very important for them to have a nice esrig, and, you know, people spend money on all kinds of things. So I wouldn't tell a person, you know, how or how not to spend if he feels that that's what he wants to do.
Let me share a story with you. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, somebody came to Rav Shlomo Zalman, a younger man, and he had a beautiful esrig. Shlomo Zalman looked at the esrig, and he asked the fellow, he said, young man, did you buy your wife a dress for Yom Tov? So he said, no, I didn't have the money. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, in that case, this esrig is puzzle.
Excellent story.
Which I thought was a powerful story that, you know, it's, can you really, at whose expense is the esrig, is the hid the mitzvah coming? Because there are many other mitzvahs. I'm curious, what's your reaction to that story?
I think it's an excellent story. A person has to have their priorities. You know, buying a wife a dress is explicit in the Gemara that it's a mitzvah of Simchas Yantiv, Isha Baila Masamcha. You can't forget about other mitzvahs and take on one and at the expense of others. People have limited funds, limited resources, limited energies, and we definitely shouldn't focus on one mitzvah as opposed to others. But esrig does is a mitzvah that creates hadar. Everyone looks for a beautiful thing. People want it. Sometimes it's very important to a person. It's hard to gauge.
Right.
You know, some people put all their kaiches into tzitzis. Other people put their kaiches into, you know, it's hard to gauge a specific, you know, person on a personal level. But generally speaking, it's definitely important to have the priorities.
Rabbi Tracy, let me ask you a last question. We get so many different types of esrogim. You have the chazenish, you have, you know, badatz, you have yanava. Is there a particular brand of esrog that you feel is more miyuchis, etc., that we should buy?
Hard question to answer because there are each one has their own milus and chesrinus. Morkov is possible. The place can say most esrogim are not morkov. The Chazanish became very popular recently because the Chazanish did two different Chazanishes, but that's aside. He did his research and he picked it, so it has a direct Messiah from an Adam Gadol who took it with the research. So many people here in Lakewood especially opt for the Chazanish. Chassidim like to go with the Yanava because they had a strong Messiah from the time of the Chassam Sofer and before. So people like to take the Yanava. Others don't. Others feel that during the war years, there were times when it didn't have a strong pikuach, so they don't take those. Others, yes, or Chashulchan brings up to take from Eretz Yisrael, where you support the people that live in Eretz Yisrael, and you're at the chavivas of Eretz Yisrael.
It's been an honor to have you on with us, and we wish you a good Shkibenshtyar and a Simchas Yamtiv.
Amen. You too, Maximatev.
Maximatev. Bye-bye.